This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Coaches, thank you for jumping into the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Coulter, back with you this week. We have none of the high-performance crew in this week. Coaching has started again, and they've all lost their voices through yelling at kids and trying to instruct during trials. I am, of course, joking. But we do have another special guest on the podcast coming in for her third time on the Talking Split royalty. This gets you up on the wall of fame in the gays room at the State Basketball Centre. We have Dr. Julia Walsh. We're talking motivation and communication for our athletes, which is such a vital bit of information as we start to get back on court with our kids. We'll kick off straight into the podcast with Dr. Julia Walsh. So for her third time on the podcast, there are very few people that get to come to the podcast three times. So you're either a very kind person or you haven't got sick of us too yet. Dr. Julia Walsh, thank you for coming back into the Talking Split podcast.
Oh, I'm absolutely delighted to come back and talk once again. We're online.
Always.
So I think the topics we're going to talk about today are really pertinent for coaches at this time of the year.
It is. And motivation and communication, I find, are two real buzzwords that coaches use a lot. And when you were to say, look, what are the important things for a coach to have? They throw out the same things: communication, leadership, those kinds of things as well. But I suppose where do we start with that? Is what is motivation in junior sport? How do we find that it's forced? Is it something that happens instinctively for the athletes? What actually is motivation?
I think you're being very generous when you call it a buzzword for a start. I think it's nearly got to the stage where it's a jargon word. Motivation is just really complex. There are a number of theories, and believe me, I'm not going down the theory train today, a number of theories about motivation. And I think the first point I'll bring up is motivation is a personal construct. So as a coach, I don't go out and motivate anybody. You motivate yourself, and in basically motivation, it means moving, and you can move in any direction. But the three common words that we use to really talk about motivation will be things such as people want to develop confidence, right? They want to have autonomy. Now, by that I mean people want some say in what they're doing, right? And particularly if we look at this generation, whether it's kids, whether it's adults, you want some say in your destiny. And the other one is the relational component. People want to be socially accepted in the group that they're in. And I think I'm seeing a lot of challenges with that at the moment, with tryouts, with the emails that are coming in. They're not with their friends. And I sort of understand it from that perspective. But there are several components in there. So if we also look at motivation, so from a coaching perspective, if you can grab onto those three components of develop competence, give athletes some sort of say or recognise that they want to have some say, and build a climate where they can actually work together and build relationships, that's a really good starting point for a coach. But then I think where motivation becomes very interesting is when we look at theories that help explain the behaviours that we're seeing. So you've got some athletes that will be, and the term we use is mastery orientated. Okay, they want to master things. And if they can master things straight away, great outcomes. If they can't master things straight away, they actually bring effort to the table and they go and they work on it and they thrive with feedback. So you sort of got that category of athlete. Then you've got another category of athlete where their emphasis really is on the outcome or winning. When things are going really well for that athlete, all is good. But when things are going wrong for that athlete, we start to see some interesting behaviours. So one, they might choose to do something that nobody can do. So it doesn't matter if they fail at it, all right, because no one was going to get 100% of their foul shots when you had to do 100, okay? Or they'll choose something that's so simple that everyone can do it. But the one behaviour I see most of the time is distracting behaviours, right? So you'll get the distracting behaviours. And as a physical education teacher, I remember the time I saw this great athlete who'd never given me any trouble before. All right, always could master skills and this, that, and the other. And one day got asked to do something that he wasn't good at. And really, I have to stand back because that's exactly what I started to see, these distracting behaviors. He did not want to demonstrate that he couldn't do something. So being able to understand our athletes is really important too. And that helps explain things. But from that sort of perspective, then how do you create a coaching environment where you can cater for both of those athletes? So that becomes a challenge, and you can do it by mixing up things that do have challenge and things that are relational and things that require effort. But how you talk about them will be important.
And it's difficult this time of year. I mean, we were just talking about it before, like VJBL trials have just finished. So you've got a whole new group of people, and we understand the social element to that as well. You touched on it a little bit before, that they're not with their friends. And it's like, well, that's not really what representative basketball's about. That's what domestic basketball's for. So that's a little bit difficult. But you've got a whole group of people that have really been a little bit disconnected for the last 2 years, coming together and now having to integrate a little bit, where they've potentially been used to just talking on Instagram or Snapchat or via Messenger or potentially seeing each other in the beautiful world of computers that we live in at the moment. But it's so different trying to integrate all of that in when you've got so many kids coming in with different skill sets as well. So you've got the uber talented athlete that is, you know, high level and high performing versus the athlete that probably hasn't done quite as much over the last 2 years, but is now trying to find their niche and where they fit in as well. And you've got the cliques where people have been, you know, with that person in the same team all the way from under 12 through to under 18. So they have that relationship. And then you've got people that have maybe always been in a second team that have now made a first team, or have now always been in a first team and made a second team. So there's all those sorts of things as well, where they'll look for, I feel like, what is safe for them. And it's that whole, this is what I'm going to go with because this is what I know and I'm comfortable with that, rather than sort of pushing the boundaries a little bit more.
Yeah, and look, tryouts is sometimes always about that stuff too, about asking players to push the boundaries when the boundaries that they've had have been really quite restrictive. And I don't know about you, Rob, but I coached throughout the whole season, didn't miss a session, but realistically I knew that the transfer to the game was not going to be great. And if I go back to those three things about autonomy, competence, and the relational component, to me in the end it was about probably the relational component in that COVID time. So now as we go into this new space here, we need to look at how do we create that environment for growth now for these athletes. And one of those is we need to understand what motivates those athletes. And we need to look at ways where we can probably, that we can do that reasonably quickly. So for example, I have mine fill out a questionnaire. All right, I want to get a jump start on knowing my athletes. And the first question I ask on that questionnaire is, tell me about yourself, and I don't want to hear the word basketball. All right, because I need to know all of those other things about that athlete so that I have lots of communication bridges. So we all know things break down in sport and training. So can I still keep the communication going, but asking them about how their sisters are going at college? Yeah. Or, you know, how's the dog? How's this? What's your brother doing now? I need to keep communication going because communication and connection with those athletes is really important. Then, you know, I'll start to ask them about where they see themselves. What are their goals? What do they like most about basketball? And as I said, just delve into that. Try and get some information so you start to think, okay, when I'm on the court, this is what I might need to do. One of the new things I added to my form this year was a continuum of 1 to 10 where I said, okay, quiet coach approach, really loud coach approach. Where do you sit? Put a thing, and that I understand that if you put a 7, daily you probably sit within a 6 and an 8. So that now I can also start to understand how and where they fit. Do they want this approach or do they want this approach? And I have one athlete that's sitting right down at 2. So that's such a big piece of information for me, for my feedback and how I work with that athlete, as compared to my athletes who are sitting themselves up at around 8. Yep. Or whatever. So that's my new add-on to get more information about these athletes so that I know how to create that climate to get the best out of every individual that's in that group.
With that, I love the approach of trying to find out what the athletes want, because really that's what we're here for. Like, as coaches, we are here for the athletes and finding out what they want and need. Have you found it difficult to try and change your personality, well, not your personality as such, but change your approach between an athlete that craves a 2 on that scale versus an athlete that might be up around that 7? Like, do you find it difficult to have to change like that?
Look, I think it's where you decide that you will have that that approach too. So for me, with an athlete that's a 2, I'm probably not going to correct them in front of the group. Okay, I'm probably going to walk over there and say, maybe try this, that, or the other. Okay, so I know that straight away with that person. I know that if I start, you know, if I go over a certain level, I might lose that player. Then I've got all these other players where I might have to, in front of the group, suggest maybe you need to do this, that, or the other, because that's how they work. But I think, I'm sure you're the same here, initially, like, that's given me a head start, but I'm going to press 1,000 buttons to find out how this and this athlete work. Yep. Because if I can understand more about that, when they do come in and there is odd behavior, I'm going to sit back and reflect on that a little bit. I may even get them aside and say, are you having a good day? Give it to me. On a 1 to 5, where are you at? Okay, so do we need to stay away from each other for a little while? Okay, I can deal with that. Or I might contact the parent and say, what's happening? Yep. You need to give me some background here. This is very unusual behaviour. But if I don't understand the standard behaviour, how that child or adult works normally, I don't pick up the irregular behaviour that has to be explained.
Exactly. And just because an athlete says a 2 in, you know, November of this year doesn't mean they will be a 2 in July of next year either. Like, they may change and evolve with all this, and this is where the bend has to happen in coaching. Like, we can't coach the same way with the same athlete every time. They're not just copy and paste. We have to be adaptable with that, and we expect our athletes to improve and change with what's going on around them. We have to be the same as coaches.
Like, but you know what? They may stay there. I mean, I remember the story of Ron Barassi talking about 2 players that had an outstanding game. And for one, he stopped all the players at the run and just told, you know, this guy's had his purple patch today, he's done everything and whatever. The other player, he wrote something on the back of an envelope and gave it to him as he was walking through, because he knew that one would fall through the floor if he did that. So it may not change a lot, and it may not be, you know, there are some people that are quiet and they prefer that, and that's how they work, and they'll be fabulous athletes. But we need to know about that.
Yeah, it's key. And especially this time of year when we are getting new teams, where we've got players that we potentially haven't seen, because it has really been probably 2 years since we've had a full season where we're used to dealing with athletes. So what they were 2 years ago isn't necessarily what they're going to be now as well. So trying to find a balancing act between how much time do you put into knowing your athletes and the whole murky grading area that sits above us at the moment, where everyone needs to win and win now, and the competition comes into it. There's so much more that we can do than just the on-court stuff. And you're talking about doing a survey that takes zero time away from your on-court stuff. It takes very little time for the athlete to do. They can probably do it in 10 minutes, which is not a massive imposition on anyone, especially the way kids are able to use technology. Like, it's not like me single figure typing or anything like that. They're actually pretty good with this sort of stuff. But it puts you a long way down the path of now being able to establish what is our team going to look like. If you have 9 introverts, well, you're going to have to coach the team very differently to have, you know, 9 extroverts. So it now allows you to do a lot more, and it's just more efficient for you as a coach. Like, has this been something that you've done every year and have started to evolve that? And how does it sort of marry out with your team goals and the motivation behind that?
I do this every year. It is my jump start to know my athletes. And then I can tell you next week or tomorrow night actually, I will be pulling stuff out of that already. Yep. To be able to have that. I mean, there's someone at barracks for the All Blacks. They are going to get payout on Wednesday night about the All Blacks. Yeah, so we will be starting the banter and the this that straight away. And I think you've just got to, you do have to make that time. I mean, I'm fortunate in that I can run a camp with them, so I will run a camp in December for a full day. Now, half of that will be on team building, really team building activities where a basketball may not even be used at all. But I want them doing that. And I also want them having to, you know, I'll do activities. As you said, they've been online for that whole time. I'll do activities where they've got to get from point A to point B and somehow as a group they've got to support each other and do that. Well, I haven't done that sort of stuff for a very long time. So looking at how do we give them some shared experiences that they can have as a platform now to build upon. And for me, you know, I'm observing, I'm part of it, but I'm gathering information as I go to see how I can best help, you know, light a fire for these kids, yeah. Really. And as I said, it's not just kids. We forget that adults play and want to have fun too. And the fun, and I think that's worth teasing out in motivation, where when you talk about fun often, you know, oh, it's laughing, it's having a joke and it's having this. But fun and enjoyment is also really about challenge and taking on challenge and being able to thrive in that environment and celebrate when you get it right. And as coaches, I think we really got to find the ways to celebrate when someone gets it right. I refuse to do a cartwheel now, but, you know, I might do a tap dance. You know, but they all know that I am going to get quite excited when something that they've been working on in practice transfers to a game or another environment.
And it is. It's that sense of accomplishment more than anything else. I feel like that helps create a sense of belonging as well. When you're succeeding and you're accomplishing something that you maybe haven't been able to do before, then all of a sudden you feel like you're part of it. And if it's celebrated by you as the coach and the players all of a sudden see that you've achieved something here and we want to be happy for you, well, that player's going to want to continue to turn up. And that's the real key. We want our players continuing to turn up because... And we've seen it with the use of technology, like the little badges and alerts that come up with, well done, you've hit your step goal, and you sort of feel, hey, good job today. Like it's, you know, been a little bit harder over the last 2 years, but it is, it's a small thing that really costs nothing other than just a little bit of time and acknowledgement to say, well done. Like you've done what you needed to do. And the fun, I can't stress this enough to coaches, please do not lose the fun out of your training sessions at the moment. Like this is such a really important time where kids have made a big choice to come back to the sport where they potentially haven't been doing that over the last couple of years. For a lot of kids, it would be very easy for them to give it away, and for adults too. Like, I'd be really interested to see our senior domestic numbers when we sort of get fully into sport again. Like, how many people have wanted to come back? They come back because the social connection's there. They enjoy testing themselves and competing with other people. But they enjoy being around something that they enjoy going to. Like, I still remember as a kid, when we used to have to do like the diaries at primary school and things like that, I remember every Monday morning was, how do I go in basketball on the weekend? And every Friday was, I get to play in 24 hours. Like that was the big motivating factor. And we can't lose sight of that for our kids. This is, if they're anxious about going to a training session or anxious about going to a game or something like that, something's wrong and we have to try our best to correct that. And how will we do that? Well, that's a different argument altogether, but that's going to be demotivating for them if they're really highly anxious and nervous about going to something. And we have to find a way to make that just a little bit balanced out for them where we can still test them and push them, but we know we're not going to get them to a point where they're just so riled up with anxiety that they can't compete as well. And that's, I mean, that's difficult.
And I think we've got to understand that really skill-wise and everything, I mean, I look at my last year's team and think, where did I get them to? Not far out, they were under 16s, but I don't know that I got them very far out under 14s. Yep. Really with their skill development. And the group that I'm getting in now where, I, you know, if I've got bottom age kids, they might be, you know, 14, 13, 14, but their skill level and team game level is behind.
Yep.
So we have to be a bit patient with how we get them back to a point. And then we have to look at our own coaching. And I think coaches also need to I think getting back to a couple of things you said there, coaches need to step back and say, what is the experience we want these athletes to get from being involved? Right? What is that experience? And then as a coach, how do I contribute to that experience? Because sometimes I think when we look at it from that perspective, it opens up the angle a little bit more, because we want kids to, we want, of course we want them to get their skills, but we also want them to engage, be able to engage positively with feedback. We want them to be resilient. We want them to be happy. We want them to continually play in the sport regardless of what their pathway is. And they're bigger picture things as compared to just we want to win. All they want to do is win VC. Out of all my, the 11 that I had the other day, one child, one girl mentioned that I want to win VC. No one else. Want to be with their friends. Want to develop their skills. Got some goals. We forget. We absolutely forget why they want to be there. And we just have basketball as a way of, that's our platform. That allows us to have these young people engaged in sport.
Yep. I was talking to someone the other day about it and sort of likened it to a learner driver. Like realistically, as the coach, we sit in the passenger seat. We have to be there. Like it's part of the deal. Like as a learner driver, we have to be there. But ultimately, we're not driving the car. Like that's the player that sits there driving the car. Now they'll make mistakes. They'll go over the speed limit. They won't put the indicator on. All that sort of stuff. And it's our job to help and correct that. But it's not our job to grab the wheel and yank it to the left and turn it down a different path. And I think as coaches, that's our job. Help, but you know, and Zoe says it all the time. Intervene, but don't interfere. Like let them go down their path.
And how do we do that? And I think that that's where, so you got your learner driver there. So as soon as something goes wrong, you don't yank them out of the seat and jump in yourself. You ask questions. You know, what are the other options do you think that we may have had? Can you tell me what the focus was of what we're going to do? Because you need to check sometimes. I think that's a point with, now, we're mixing a bit of communication and motivation here, that we assume that because we say something, it is interpreted in a certain way. You know what? Communication isn't about me. It's about how it's interpreted. So often we need to, within those situations, we need to member check or ask our athletes, can you tell me in your words what you just heard? All right? Because they may have heard something totally different. And if you've asked them to get low in their in defensive stance, what you think is low and what they think is low are probably two different things. So great use of technology there. I'm going to use a lot more technology this season. That's one of my goals. Get one of my assistant coaches to take the picture of that now, so that I can use that and do some more teaching through that so they can visually see what I'm asking them to do. But we've got to, do a lot more coaching by questioning, asking them. And when you ask people, using the right frame, of course, then you're engaging them, all right? And also you need to know the why. If you're asking them a question, you need to know why you're asking, but you also have to be ready to say, this is why we're doing it. And why is really important in the motivational piece too, because we can go through a whole training session and the athlete doesn't make any meaning of it. So we need to be able to say, this is why we're doing it. This is how it connects. This is, you know, this is the big picture we've got, and this is how we're connecting back in. Because if they understand that, then there might be some more buy-in as to why they would do it as such.
Yep. And it's a fascinating piece when you start to go down the path of it's their journey and it's their team and those kinds of things. If they know what their end goal is going to be, it's we as coaches now get to put some building blocks in place to say, well, okay, here's how we get there. We don't just go from step one to step eight. We have to do some work along the way. And if we can involve the players in that process, they're going to feel more a part of the team. They're going to know that it's their journey, but they're then going to be motivated to go, well, look, I'm only on step four at the moment. I need to get to eight, but look at the work I've done to get to step four to this point. So that's inspiring for the athlete as well to then go away and say, well, look, I'm halfway. Like, I don't know how long it's going to take me to get there, but I'm at least halfway down my path. Now I feel like I've accomplished something and I've got something in mind, a goal in mind, which, as we all know, goals are a great way of motivating people to make sure that they're at least still on track.
Let me tell you about goals, Rob. Let me tell you about goals. I asked mine to write some goals. There will be a correction next week because I'm going to bring in a few stats for them and give them a chance to rewrite those. But a warning to every other team out there, if my team achieves the goals they've set for themselves this week, they will be in the Women's National Basketball Association next week. Okay, so they're going to be getting 80% on three-point shots. They're going to take 5 made three-point shots a game. They're up at 90% for their foul shots. So there's a bit of a correction, but that's part of their learning too. Yep. So being able to give them some, well, here's the stats you might see at a Women's National Basketball Association at, a Big B or whatever. So where do you think would be realistic? Because I'm not going to hold you to the 80%. I think it's too high at this stage.
Exactly. And unrealistic goals will actually impact on motivation, because if they set something that is far too high, that is never achievable, they're just going to get deflated over the course. So it does have to be something that's at least measurable for a start, but also realistic that's in there as well.
Yeah, and we've got to help them with that.
Yep.
We've got to help them.
Yeah. No, it's exactly right. And that's not easy to do for any of our athletes, because everyone wants to succeed and they want to be good now and all those kinds of things, and not easy to do for anyone in that space. But how do you, I suppose, what's the easiest way to bring up with an athlete that they look like they're maybe not disinterested, but maybe lacking a little bit of motivation? They're sort of going through the motions a little bit more, because you can't walk up to an athlete and say, you look like you don't want to be here, where's your motivation? Because that's going to just send shockwaves through the athlete and they're going to feel more fearful than anything else. How do you approach that with them? Is that linked back to your survey at the start?
Well, actually, one of the things that I've introduced over the last 2 years, and it is them being able to measure themselves. So we talk about, like, I have training session 8 a.m. Sunday morning. You can imagine what happens there. Like, I get up at 5:30. I'm fine, and I've had a coffee on the way. So getting them energy up is, well, that's my, I take on that role, but it's, a bit challenging there. But with one of the things I get them to measure on a 1 to 10 is, what did you bring to the training session today? Now, that is not your score or whatever. It's a mixture. It's, it's a bit like a DNA thread. You're bringing, what energy did you bring? What learning happened for you? Did you enjoy the session? Or it's sort of like, but there are a number of components of it. And I have to teach them a little bit about that. But I want them to be honest at the end of a session. But by surfacing it, all right, they know I'm going to ask them. So at the end of the session, I might get 6.5, or I thought I was an 8 today, I was a this and that. So early on, I'm trying to get a measure as to, okay, then have they got a really good picture of themselves? And we get better at it as we go through the season. But it's, to me, it's more about let's surface it, let's measure it, and then I can come back to it in other training sessions and I can use that language around it. So rather than that, and look, every now and then I look at some drill that's being run and I will turn around and say, okay, are you happy with that? So what would you like to do? Would you like to spend 2 more minutes on that, or do you want me to go on to something else? No one has ever said go on to something else. They want to go back out there and they want to prove that actually they can be much better at that activity than just what they're displaying out there at the moment.
But you get to that point through asking the question. Similar to what you were talking about before, like, you can only reach that point if you allow it to be their journey, their pathway, where you're engaging with them now. It's very easy for you as a coach to walk in and say, this isn't good enough, we're doing this again. But if you can give them the opportunity to self-reflect a little bit, now they have ownership over it, and now they can sit there and say, actually, I kind of have been mailing it in on this drill. I haven't been listening to the teaching points and fulfilling what I was supposed to do with this as well. So I think that's such an important part that you spoke about earlier that now relates exactly to what we're talking about. You have to ask the questions and bring them into the tent. As coaches, we can be the preacher of all things holy and tell them what needs to happen and here's how it should look and here's what should happen, but that's coaches' eyes. I mean, they're so different to a player's eyes.
And I think that becomes important with your plan too. Look, one of the things I would always teach with planning, I think it's a missing component, is that not only do you write, set up your plan where you're just, you know, here's my block, here's my time, here's my what I'm teaching, here's my notes on it, and of course, you know, obviously my focus for the session, I think you need to add a communication plan. All right. If you're teaching something new, you've actually got to practice the words. How are those words going to come out of my mouth? Get in front of a mirror and practice that. Write and then have a look when you're doing that plan. Could I change that into questions? Right. So what would the question look like for that instead of me telling them what to do? Now, it depends on what you're doing. The questions for me start to really develop, particularly as we start to learn things, because then I can come back and in and out as such. But we do need to prepare for that, because what comes out of our mouth doesn't necessarily communicate well. And I think Coach K said great teams communicate well, but great teams have to learn to communicate. Yep. It is not a given. We have to practice the communication piece of our coaching. And I think with communication, people always talk about communication maybe as a tool. I see it as an instrument. So a tool works on a small job. An instrument, we have to practice it. We have to tune it. We have to play different things on it to be able to work with this amazing instrument we've got that we take for granted, that by opening our mouth, something good comes out of it.
It's a fantastic analogy, more than anything. I mean, it's really interesting as we talk about what do the kids hear, of course, and we talk about communication, and it's not necessarily just communication from coach to athletes. It's also athletes to each other, and I mean, there's a social connection that sits within that, obviously, but how do you get your athletes to communicate with each other a little better?
Okay, so look, I'm preparing for Wednesday's training. Like I started doing that a couple of days ago, thinking about that and already thinking about the communication thing. So my emphasis probably for the first 15 minutes was to select skill, particular activities that not only allow me to, you know, that they feed into the big picture, but that they actually have to communicate in. All right, so that will be the whole emphasis. We will start that training session. You better know each other's names. If we don't do that, this, that, and the other. So looking for ways where they have to communicate. But then I think there are other games you can play. So, you know, you might be doing a shell drill. And if the defense are not talking, well, I'm just going to give another point to the offense. All right, if the offense aren't talking, they're going into deep. So I can manipulate, and there's a bit of game sense in there. I can create games and manipulate games for the outcome I need or the outcome the team needs. So if the outcome really is the focus of communication, then I'm going to design games around the communication part is what I'm going to reward for those teams.
Is it when we talk about communication, I think everyone thinks the same thing when we go to communication, and it's all the verbal stuff. But how important is the non-verbal communication with the athletes as well? And it might be simply as walking past someone, giving them five on the way through, or a pat on the back on the way through, or something like that. Does that, in the body language of a coach, I mean, that screams non-verbal communication straight away. Like you've all seen the coaches with arms crossed and folded and looking irate along the way. But how important is the non-verbal communication for coaches?
Well, look, and there's figures around that. I think it's at 9% what comes out of your mouth, 37% the actual, or 42% might be body language. But body, and there's other, tone is the other one. So body language is just so important. And there's been some really good research on body language, and particularly when you talk to, the research has been done with athletes. So let's take the game situation, because I think that's the one we probably lose a lot more of our body language with. We're standing on the sideline and someone's just made, you know, two mistakes. So we decide to whip them off the court, and they come off the court and you're standing there and you go, yeah, good job. Like, come on. They know that this is all happening and they're not even listening to a word you say, because it's not genuine communication. They have read that in your body, all right? They know how you are feeling. But we can manage that. And sometimes we have to be actors as well. Or, you know, we have to orchestrate our own body language. So 8 o'clock in the morning, we have to be going in with a body language that is open and inviting and ready to get going, regardless of what happened the night before. Like, we have to really be conscious of our body language. And like someone like Guy Malloy, every training session is coached, it is recorded. And he goes in and in detail looks at the clarity of his language and the body language that he gives and how that is affecting the athlete's performance. And sometimes it's worth doing, I think, as a coach, get someone to film you in your training session and mic up or carry a phone or whatever, but get it recorded to see how you actually do behave in that session, because you don't get to see yourself as such, or you don't get to see sometimes also how the athletes are responding to your communication.
You hit on the last one. That was the one I was about to ask you about. So the response of the athlete after you've given direction is such an important one, because a lot of the times I feel like we can give that direction to athlete. We talk to them as we're looking at them. We turn and look at something else because we're about to move on to something. And then we find out that the athlete's slumped shoulders. You know, they're feeling dejected because they've potentially been given feedback about something they did incorrectly and they needed to work on as well. The impact that our words can have on athletes is so often lost. That I know from my kids that I've coached over the years, there's been stuff that I've said 10 to 12 years ago to an athlete in under 12s that they still recite back to me word for word. It's like that was a throwaway comment that I didn't even think about at the time. I just said it because that was what was on my mind, but it sticks with them. And the impact that has on them long term is just so vast.
And that gets back to, I think, to some of that planning. Once you start to work through your plan and your communication plan as well, it's a bit like surfacing, you know, what do I bring to the session? When you start to look at your communication, you're starting to surface that. It becomes more of a self-awareness of that. And as I said, you know, treat it as that instrument of something that you have and can use. And you've mentioned the body language. There's the, you know, as I said, there's the tone, there's the tempo, there's the verbal. And how can you actually bring some of that together for your teaching? So communication wise, like we talk about, you know, kids learn in a different way. The research on that isn't conclusive, but to me it does no harm, all right? So there's no harm in it. So if I'm going to coach something, like if I'm going to teach something, what are the points? What are the 3 points? Don't go beyond 3. Just don't go beyond 3. And if it's high pressure, don't go beyond 1. So 3 points here. Talk, demonstrate, or have someone else demonstrate. Go back to your athletes. Ask them what they saw. Get them to shadow. Get them to demonstrate. Bring them back. What are the 3 points again? Now, you can do that in 30 seconds. But what's happened too is you've had 9, like I think it's 9 different ways of saying it, showing it, whatever. And then actually when they're performing, here's the discipline for the coach. Feedback only on those points.
Yep.
Not on the 100 points that make up a layup. If they're the 3 points you worked on, stick to those 3 points.
Yep.
And if you can do something too, and they've done this, some of this in soccer, which is great, if you can get them to recite, so you got under 12, you know, left foot, right foot, get them to talk through it at the same time as they're doing, it layers the brain differently with their learning. So get them to do it. And if it's got a rhythm to it, give them the rhythm to it. Use your voice as a rhythm. You know, so we need a 1, 2, this, that. So get that rhythm happening to help them with their rhythm and learn it when they're doing that as well.
It's such a good way of looking at things, because we do know all our athletes. And this is where your survey can come in really handy at the start of the year. You might know that someone plays cello or something like that in your team. Yeah. So all of a sudden you know that they understand rhythm and beat. So that's an easier way for you to teach that an athlete that might be struggling with that. you can now delve a little bit deeper. So understanding your athletes allows you to coach them better, so your communication gets better. Yep. As your communication gets better, their motivation gets better, because now there is, I've got a personal connection. I feel like this is tailored coaching to me now. It's not just the generic to my team. It is specific to me and what I'm going through. And the success from that point will just breed more success. And that's the really cool part.
Yeah. And, you know, some days nothing works. And some days you look at your lesson plan and you just screw it up. You put it in your pocket and think, I'm just going to have to absolutely deviate here because I'm going down a track that's just not, there's going to be no good outcome for my athletes, no good outcome for me. Have I got a couple of things that I know just really excite them and can get them going again, because that's what today looks like.
Yeah, most definitely. So how would, if you've got a player that's potentially had a negative experience for whatever reason, they've either performed poorly or they had a run-in with the coach or whatever the case may be, how would you encourage an athlete to fall back in love with the game again? Is that on them as the athlete to work that out, or is that on you as the coach to help facilitate that so that they can get back to a point where they feel safe, they feel comfortable, they want to do it again?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is a discussion with the athlete and teasing out what would work for them. What are the steps that we could take? And for a coach, really asking, how do you want me to work with you? What works? Finding out what works for them. And once, yeah, working on those things, autonomy, giving them the capacity to have some say in their destiny, and also maybe focusing on a couple of things, okay, a couple of things we want to work on. Let's just get that right at the moment. Now, sometimes kids make good decisions for themselves too. Let's be realistic with this as well. I would always be devastated if someone dropped out and never played a game or sport again, all right? I would be devastated that that was my impact on that person and their future health. However, if someone decides that actually basketball isn't for them, but they're going to go and play volleyball or that, well, then that's fantastic. All right, I'll miss them or whatever from my squad and that, but if they're going on, if I look long-term for their health outcomes and their physical activity outcomes, that's okay. And it's not burnout, it's just a change of opinion. And if we're looking particularly at young girls and particularly that under 16 cohort, we see a lot of change happening at that point. And by under 18, most clubs will have reduced numbers of teams. And there are things happening. We've got school happening. We've got, well, you know, that age group. We've got all sorts of things happening in there. But if they really enjoy their sport and you make it a place where they want to come back to, the chances of them staying are higher. But you've got to work at it. You've actually got to work at it. And sometimes respect their choices that they make in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And it won't be an overnight thing. That's the thing. Like, if someone's got to that point where it's like, gee, I'm not sure if I really want to continue with this, they're not going to wake up the next day and think, well, gee, I had a good session last night, I'm back in. It will be a slow build, because those kids are pretty fragile at that stage. Like, if they've got to a point where they're thinking about dropping out, well, now you're starting to get to a point where you can't just build it straight back up straight away. It has to be, like you said, a slow build where, look, maybe we have some check-ins along the way. I mean, in some cases, the worst thing you can do is highlight it, because then they feel super stressed and anxious about it, and it can be a real problem for them as well.
And this is the impact of that too. I always think, you know, the coach screaming on the sideline, right? And I've been that coach, and I sometimes now and then still get up and do that, working on it. Kids know when they make a mistake most of the time. Adults know when they make a mistake. You know, the shot didn't drop. They know the shot didn't drop. We do not have to reinforce any of this. They will know. I mean, the questions are, what would we change? And actually, it's a really good bench discussion. What were the options there? What could we have done? So how do we educate and have that bench watching, that sort of stuff? But if you continue to, if players know that you're going to whip them off the court, if they make a mistake, one, they won't take risk. That's not my. I don't enjoy that basketball the Nunnally is taking. We want them to be able to do that. Also, what happens is we get from that the stress, we get a number of responses. One could be just muscle tension. Now, once we have muscle tension, you can't play. You need to be relaxed to play well. Or it could be decision making. All right. So suddenly they either become tunnel vision, or they become, you know, they're seeing everything, and they're seeing what's happening on the other court as well, and they're actually abusing the referee on the other court, not our court. They see everything there. And for others, it's a combination of both. So muscle tension and the vision is distorted, and they can't play because they're too worried about whatever, you know, the paralysis is happening out there. So as a coach, you've got to understand, I've got it for my players to play well, they need to be relaxed in how their muscles need to be relaxed in how they do this.
Yep.
So how do we do that? And that's I think some of the things too, and how we prepare and motivate our players to games and work with our players in games. There'll be some players that if you're going to try and give them all the information before the game, it's gone. So are there other ways of communicating with your athletes so you can give that information to them a couple of days before? They can read it. You know, some kids need to read it 1,000 times. Some are going to read it on the car going in. So that when you get to the game, in your pre-game, it gets back to the question, what's the focus tonight? Who's going to do this? Where's our target? Suddenly they own it. It's embedded, embodied, and they're relaxed to be able to go on the court, warm up, get ready to play.
Oh, I like that. It's an interesting one, and we sort of touched on it before we started recording as well. Is spite a healthy motivator for athletes where they have that mentality of the chip on the shoulder, I'm going to prove you wrong, you've said I can't do this, and now I'm going to go out and do that. Is that sustainable over the course of a career?
No, it's not sustainable. I think we said that, you know, like we'll go out and press 1,000 buttons and we'll work out that, this is how this player works. I mean, I remember one player where the coach used to say, I wish someone would just hit her because suddenly like if someone fouled her, she then plays. Like there's so much variation out there as to what turns a switch on for a player. Some can do it from the very start. Something happens in the game and a switch comes on, or it's a close game and a switch comes on or off. But I think if we find that we've got a player that is like that, we need to go back and think of our communication. So maybe it's we're going to say, Nata, your challenge tonight is to do this. So you've been working at this level now. Your challenge is to see if you can get it up to another, you know, you've been able to get 3 rebounds a game. Your challenge is 5. So throw it back on them to own it. So much rubbish in life. You don't, as a coach, you don't want to be thinking about being spiteful to get the best out of someone. And I wonder what that teaches our athletes anyway, yeah, about leadership and about how to get the best out of somebody. Because we forget that everything that we do is a lesson for them, for other parts of their life as well.
And I find exactly what you're talking about. You might get a reaction for a game, but that's it. Like it's not sustainable over the course of a season. It's, you know, and if you keep having to push that same button every week and it's that I need to sort of rev them up to get them going, that's going to drain you as a coach for a start. But it also wanes in the level of impact over the, like, how much further do you keep having to go to get that reaction? That's not healthy for anyone, yeah. I don't think. That's going to do more damage than it's going to do any good, I believe, in that space. And look, to be fair, it's probably worked, in my experience, better with boys because they will have that screw you mentality about it. Well, I'm going to prove you wrong. Whereas our female athletes that I've worked with haven't engaged with that at all. It's almost been they've become very insular when that's happened, and they've probably lost motivation to continue playing when that's happened to them. So trying to find what's going to work for every player is important, but be very careful if you are going to go down the path of I'm going to push buttons.
That's right. And, you know, I had a saying from a coach, once you've had to go to the emotional well, there's nothing left.
Yep.
You know, you just it's your last card and you're taking a risk with it. it could go either way.
Yep. When we sort of talk about the motivation, is this whole grind mentality of you need to be up at 4 a.m., you need to lift weights, you need to shoot, and you need to have all this done by 6 a.m. because everyone else is still asleep, and then you go to school and you can't socialize with anyone, you have to get in the gym and get shots up, and then you leave school, and then you have to go and do more work after that. This grind mentality, it's interesting from a motivation perspective, because some people can obviously do it. There are obviously people out there that this is their full-time job and they can do that sort of thing, and that's what they devote their whole time, energy, and emotional toll to. But does that risk burnout, which would then impact motivation for our athletes?
I think it absolutely risks burnout, particularly in juniors. I think we at the moment we have an issue with early specialisation and understanding that really our best athletes are those that play multiple sports and have opportunities to play and decision make across sports, not those kids who are just, grinding it out every morning, every whatever, playing the one sport and thinking that that's all they have to do. If we go back to that motivation piece again, so what else is happening in their life? What is the relational piece? What is the autonomy in that? Now, there are some kids that just do that naturally, and I think for those that do that naturally and want to do it, that's their way of life. That's fine. But they're probably also the kids that are going to bed at 8 o'clock at night because they're tired. But, it's a privilege to coach. And we have these young, for those young athletes, we have to also think about their longevity in the sport. We know this is such an imprecise science of choosing great athletes from our junior cohorts. I think I saw it was at soccer, it was like 14%. That's how good they are at selecting kids from juniors through to seniors. So we are actually working with people that will all have different pathways, will land differently, and we have to work with that. We have to understand load and what's happening in load, because I've got injuries. I haven't even started the season. I've got injuries already in the team. So how do you avoid that, or how do you make sure it's safe physically and emotionally for those players? And what are you going to do with a player that can't come to a training session? How are you going to treat that? How are you going to work with that? The grind, I don't know who that benefits. I really don't know who that benefits, but I don't think it benefits the athlete at all. Probably all those extra classes that they're doing and whatever, it's paying someone's someone's job.
Yeah, it's very true. It might give them extra followers on social media or something like that as people are envious, but that's probably about it, because we do have to be really mindful that these kids have probably done nothing for 2 years in the context of what their usual day-to-day would look like. So we have to be very careful.
And I think there's an important piece in here too for parents. We don't educate parents enough on this whole thing. So if someone else is doing sprint training, we think our child has to go and do sprint chain, or they've got to do that, or they've got to be in this program and this, that and the other. So we don't actually give them guidance in what is appropriate for this child. And it's not appropriate for them to be doing their physical activity 7 days a week. It's just not appropriate. Are they getting to do the other things the kids of that age do as well? Are they, we can get very, as I said, too specialised, too early, and there is a cost for other parts of the athlete's development.
Yep.
And let's get rid of the word athlete and just say the child's development.
Yep, without question. It's we focus so often that I think I can't think who it was that said it to me. Like, kids are not mini adults. Like, they're not adults that are just, smaller and younger. That's not what they are. They are a completely different person that will have different backgrounds, will have different motivators, that will have different fears and hang-ups and all those kinds of things as well. We can't just sit there and just almost set and forget. It's like, well, if you just follow this one pathway, then you will get out the other end and you will be what you want to be. It's not a fair sport. It's not an exact science like that.
Yeah, no. Who's it? Trish Fallon, I think. Didn't she come to sport when she was 16? Came across from tennis.
Chris Anstey.
Yeah, he came at, 18 years of age? Yep. And tennis again all those great skills there transferred across. And the other one is place effect too. That's really interesting. Those kids who are from, let's have a look at our Opals. Where are they from?
Yep.
Okay. I bet most of them are not from the city, because those kids who've played in the country are playing different sports all the time. They also get to probably at under 16 play adult sports, so they get more chance to play and decision make and whatever. They just make better athletes, not because of where they're born, but because of the opportunities in those areas, populations of 500,000 or less, to play multiple things and have all those opportunities.
Absolutely. So
Basketball Victoria is probably not happy with me saying that.
Well, no, that's okay. Every week I worry every time the podcast goes out. It's like, geez, did I say anything this week that can get me fired? To this point, we're okay. But, it's a week-by-week proposition. But I'd be just curious, has COVID had an impact on how we as coaches communicate with our athletes? Like, has it moved away from less face-to-face? Is it involving more technology? I know, talking to Zoe last night, she had a VNPP session with her country athletes. And she's very big on games-based learning and let them figure it out and that sort of stuff. But because she hasn't coached for so long, she almost wanted to intervene too much and stop everything and try and correct. And she found herself sort of falling into that gap and had to make an adjustment. But has it really changed on how we coach the athletes?
Okay, I'm going to premise something about this beforehand. I think with COVID too, we have coaches and we have athletes where this environment was, the COVID environment was quite threatening and quite unsafe, and they were unable to do this at all. And I think we just have to respect that COVID affected people differently here, and hence, some programs moved, some didn't, but that was the environment. I think COVID has been really interesting with how we've had to navigate Zoom or whatever platform we used, and we had to work with our athletes and actually then find things that were appropriate for delivery through that platform and look for then how we could build challenge and build things into it. From a language perspective, and look, I'm talking about, in some ways, some of my own experiences here, I feel like I paved the path and walked on it when it was still wet in trying to create something that we could work on, and it was a co-construction. So very much the athletes and I working together to try and understand how to communicate best here for running a challenging session that we could move with, which got me to the stage of writing a language page of, okay, here's the language we're going to use consistently with how we do that. So that will filter into my coaching. But I get exactly what Zoe's saying here, because when we're doing that stuff, we're very much, we are the, they're virtually the orchestra. We are conducting in that environment. In trying to get that happening and making sure that, for that 1 hour we've got them, it's a really rich, good session for them. And I know there are, I heard coaches talking about, I can't look at the athletes because I've got my timesheet and I'm working through. And I'm thinking, we've all done this differently as to how we've been able to interact. But I spoke to another group recently about COVID, and I said, you're going to find yourself rusty. As a coach, with your language and how you coach, you're going to find yourself rusty. And you're not only from your language, but from the space you've been working with. So with the Zoom and the online platform, I've had to use a lot more imagery. Like, I need you to imagine this. I need you to get a sense of size of space. Imagine this space. Now go and set it out with cones and do this. So imagery there. I'm back on the court and I think most of the time I'm in the way. Like, I need to find my dimensions of working on a, you know, a 3D space again, and then the language again on how do I do this on the floor. And I reckon for the first time in a long time, I got my planning wrong for my timing, because I am so used to this and that happening that it didn't, yeah, I really had to think about this week's training based on that. I finished like 10 minutes early, like doesn't happen. Just, yeah. So it's a, for coaches, I think it is, we've got to be a bit patient with ourselves to be able to do that and get back to that place where we understand our floor, understand how to work with athletes in that three-dimensional space. And remember, the athletes haven't worked with each other for a while. So it's some interesting passing going on up the court. Yeah. And things like that. So, yeah, and we've got to be disciplined in that. So we need to set ourselves some goals, I think, when we go out there. Yep. So today, like, these are the questions I'm going to ask. I'm going to let them run. I'm just going to have to shut up, really, just let it happen. If at the end of it needs correction, I will give correction or whatever. But at the moment, it's about getting them out, getting them connecting, getting this, which is a real pressure when we've got a, what, VC in 2 weeks and a this, that and the other. It's, yeah. It's very challenging.
No, completely agree. And look, I'll be honest, I jumped on court for trials and found myself to be really sloppy just in the words I used. I stuttered a lot. I repeated myself like I did the old double, like, get there. And it's like, well, that's just a waste of words. Like, it's that sort of stuff that I really struggle with, jumping back on court and giving direction and being okay with a little bit of mess, because as coaches, we are perfectionists. We want it to be perfect, but realistically, it's never going to be. But trying to let the athlete have enough rope to do it how they think it should be done, and then trying to correct that rather than giving them all the information at the start and hoping that it's done meticulously all the way through. It's something that I think we're all going to have to get better at as we get back on court and get back into this. But I certainly found myself to be not at the level I would usually expect of myself coming back.
But be nice to yourself.
Yeah, you do have to be a bit kinder.
Yeah, so yeah, be a bit kinder. And it's hard because we want that first session to be one that just, wow, they go home and they this, that, and the other. But probably they go, wow, I got to work and this person's on my team. They haven't mentioned you. It was just about all this stuff that happened.
Absolutely. One area I'm curious about is we're talking about like Gen Y, Gen X, millennials, you know, Gen Z and everything that goes with it. And I'm not across that by any stretch of the imagination. But how can we better communicate with athletes that are coming through that are a little bit younger, that we potentially haven't dealt with this age group of players coming through before? Like, is there any advice you can give to coaches around the communication piece in that space?
Look, what I would say is, one, know your athletes. Allow them to laugh at you, because you'll have some strange language too. Like, I talk about Brown's cows out there and they just look at me and I think, yeah, better explain Brown's cows with all their gear. And I think anything, if they tap into a certain way of doing things, actually ask them, okay, do you want me to do this? How do I do it? They love teaching as well. So what would work here? Okay, let's have a try this and see if it works. All right. So, and I think giving them once again some say in the process of how we can do this, it says you respect them. They've got something to teach you. This is a learning environment, not just for the athletes, but for the coaches. And, you know, those moments when you can say, well, you taught me something today. I'm going home and I'm writing that down. That was just fantastic. Never thought about that. You are brilliant. Letting them be teachers.
Yep.
And you be the learner. About how we best going to work together.
Yep. I really like that. That's I must admit that's something I'm really going to struggle with this year, is sort of learning a different language, because I have been removed from my age group for a little while now. But it is going to be really difficult to see how they interact, what motivates them, how they want to be taught, how they want to do things. And we talk about it a lot, like it's, you know, the winning thing will motivate some, but it shouldn't be the driving factor behind everything. And it was Jack Fleming sent me a picture message the other day of a scout from a college over in the States, and in their scouting report had emojis. Like instead of using the whole descriptive term and that sort of stuff, they just put an emoji in there for if it was a shooter, it was a little picture of a gun, or if it was a fast player, it was a little race car and those kinds of things, because that meant more to the players. They could see that quickly and take in the information rather than reading a paragraph on what this player was. And
that's right.
That adaptability from coaches, you know, I'm bad at emojis at the best of times, but it is something that I've now got to start learning a little bit more about, because, well, if that's what the generation of athlete is coming through, well, I have to be on board. Otherwise I get left behind as a coach.
Get your team to create their own team emoji. All right, that they like doing that. Like here's their emoji that represents them as a team. So some groups do crests about, you know, what their team is about. You could also get them to do an emoji as to what this team represents, and, you know, put it on a t-shirt. And whoever does this gets the t-shirt to wear this week. You know, a bit like the Tour de France.
Yep.
Who gets the emoji t-shirt this week to wear a training?
Definitely, you know? And I've done something similar with that with, and again, boys teams who are not always the brightest kids that we deal with at times. Some of my boys teams have not been overly smart, but they are highly motivated to just compete, which was what made them entertaining. And we had a championship belt, like just one of those stupid wrestling ones. And it was almost a case of, if you were the MVP at our training session this week, you got the belt. And they thought it was hilarious. They'd pose with it and do all this sort of stuff, which would go on their social media. Yeah. It's like, they were idiots, but they were entertaining idiots. So, you know, from mine, it's like, well, that got buy-in from our group as well. So that was something that they decided that they wanted to do, and like, I helped facilitate that as a coach, but that's really my job. If that's something that makes them train harder and train better and they get more out of it, and, you know, we talk about the motivation at 8 a.m. on a Sunday morning, if they walk in there knowing I'm getting that belt today, well, that can be enough to get them over the line.
And I think Doc Councilman, a great swimming coach, he used to, once a month, have the jelly bean trials. I always thought about doing it for foul shooting. So everyone used to turn up and try and beat their personal best in their favourite event. And they got a 1 kilo bag of jelly beans if they did. So, I mean, you could do something similar. And I'm not sure about what we're allowed to do anymore. You know, we know we can't have nuts or this or that. You might have to have a variety of things there or something else. But you could have the foul shooting challenge every so often, that they come in the last half hour of the training session for the whole club is to go out there and do your 10 shots and see if you can beat it and record it and do that type of thing.
Absolutely. And in one area, and you touched on it a little bit before, is have the players teach you. But having that sense of community within your club as well, because they haven't had that for so long now, is can you get your players to go and coach an under-12s training session or something like that, just to have their faces shown at another training session, which will help build a little bit of community and club about the place, but also puts the players in the shoes of a coach. And it's like, it's not easy. Like when you want someone to stand on the elbow and they're not on the elbow, it's frustrating, isn't it? Like it's that sort of a thing, which I think is so vital for our kids.
That's a lovely exercise, getting kids to actually get out there and do some coaching and turn around and say, they won't listen. Welcome to my world.
No, it's exactly it. That's exactly it. Julia, that pretty much covers off everything for me. That was fantastic. Like, as always, every time I talk to you, I take like 15 pages of notes, and I'm sure in 3 hours' time I'll have something. It's like, I should have asked this.
Next time you'll have emojis.
Exactly. Well, God only knows how that will go. But we'll see how it plays out. But I know you are doing a lot of work in this motivation and communication space in your own life at this point. So keep an eye out for all of that, and certainly once everything's ready to go, we'll certainly make sure that gets out far and wide for coaches that really need to know more about this. And, you know, we've spoken at length about, we talk a lot in coaching courses about the X's and O's and defining skill sets and how we teach, but we don't always understand our athletes. And I think this is such a vital point moving forward for coaches, in particular coming out of what we've come out of, that we just have to understand our athletes a little bit better. And if we can help inspire them and motivate them, and we can talk to them better to stay in the sport. Oh, no.
They've got to motivate themselves.
Self-motivation.
We create the climate.
That's the one. That's the one. So I didn't write that part down, but now I have. So I'm inspired to write that down. But I think that's such a vital part for our athletes, is that we can do better by them. We really owe it to them. And if we can keep them in the sport longer and they can find their own pathway from there, like, we hope they move on to be boomers and opals, but if they want to go on referee in Olympic Games, or if they want to go on coach at a World Cup, or if they want to be score table statistician, go be that. That's quite okay. There's nothing wrong with just being the canteen person on a Friday night, because you get that social interaction as well, but you want to stay around the sport. We have to keep our kids in the sport as best we can, and that is such an important part moving forward, I think, given what we've just been through.
I've enjoyed today's session. It's great to talk on these topics. Thanks again, Rob, for the invite.
No worries, Julia. Always love having you on. I'm sure you'll be back for a fourth at some point. Like, you'll be probably the only person that's ever come back for four. But
I'll be wearing the belt.
Yeah. Exactly right. I'll send it through to you. Julia, thanks very much for jumping into the podcast again.
Yeah, absolute pleasure. Bye-bye.
Coaches, thanks for listening to the Talking Split podcast once again. Huge thanks to Julia Walsh. Every time she comes on the podcast, she just drops wisdom consistently for our coaches and things that we can help with our athletes and can make us better coaches as well. So really appreciate her time and giving up once again a whole wealth of knowledge for everyone to use with their coaching. Coaches, we are starting to move back into basketball. Good luck with it all. It's been great to be back on court the last couple of weeks. We can really see how much everyone's missed it. But good luck with your coaching. Make sure you keep up with everything you possibly can in the world of professional development and learning, and making sure that it's a good environment for your players as well. As much as the wins and the losses certainly matter for everyone, and I understand that, please don't stop teaching. That's the big message. Make it fun and keep teaching your athletes. That's going to be a really important part for everyone moving forward. That wraps us up for this week. Coaches, we'll be back with the Talking Split podcast next week. Appreciate you listening. As always, like, share, subscribe, and use the Talking Split hashtag if you need us.